Welcome to the Acceptable Accuracy Podcast. I'm Philip.
And I'm Tyler.
And today we've got two guests with us. Tyler, would you like to do the honors of introducing both guests this time? Or do you want to just do one?
I'm just going to ask them to introduce themselves. There makes life even easier. So our first guest is actually a returning guest. We have Brian. Brian, go ahead and introduce yourself.
You just introduced him.
Thank you for introducing me.
Very good.
I'm Brian. I was here for the Concealed Carry Podcast.
Nice.
Everybody say hi, Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Battle Dwarf.
Thanks.
Did you know that was his call sign before or whatever?
I listened to your whatever your second pod was, just get a feel for it. Yeah.
This is John, by the way.
Yeah. Hi, I'm John.
And in the Concealed Carry Podcast, he's the boss that I said was super cool.
That's awesome. So John, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah. My name's John. I'm Brian's boss. I did some other things and yeah, that's about it. Yeah, I tell him what to do and go home. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps, worked for the Marine Security Force for the White House Communications Agency for the majority of my time in, got out, have two kids of my own, two stepkids and a beautiful wife and two big dogs and living the dream, man.
That's awesome, dude.
That is awesome. John, you're also... So we're going to go into the podcast and get into like the meat of this podcast. And we're going to interview John about his experience working for the White House Communications Agency, specifically as a Marine. And kind of starting off from the get-go, though, obviously it's a firearms podcast. So we're going to start off something we did similar with Brian, and we're going to do a like This Week in Guns. So we'll kind of go around the horn here. I understand that John has a... This Week in Guns story already. It's probably going to trump all of us, so I'm just going to start out with you. And that way the rest of us can just kind of...
I brought home a beautiful new family member. Put a PSA pistol lore with a Aero Precision 300 Blackout 10-inch upper.
Nice.
It's Spikes Tactical Bolt Carrier Group and the tungsten powder buffer and... Threw her together. It shoots pretty sweet. It's
may nice. Or may
you
not
have
brought
shot
it already.
Then
yeah,
show me.
Yeah,
okay. Can't be confirmed, but may or may not.
So took her to range a couple times. Got put a Hollow Sun red dot on her, and she works pretty well.
That's awesome.
Wife likes shooting it, so
that was actually gonna
since
be my...
it's a 300 blackout. Do you have a suppressor as well?
That is in the works.
My man.
Know,
how many months in the works
uncle,
are you?
I am tactically waiting for a more opportune time to do the tax stamp, seeing as that I just spent, you know, a good $1,200 on a gun, and I value my life, and I love my wife.
Is there really actually, ever an opportune time to buy a suppressor other than yesterday?
I
agree with that, yes.
But I was going to ask you that if you had an optic on it, and the answer already was yes. And
yep.
The three of us at this table, who are normal human beings, actually shoot Hollow Sun optics as well.
Okay,
too,
so. Yeah. This is my yep. first Hollow Sun. I've been I've had a Vortex Spark, and I've done, I had a Primary Arms, like one of their OG ones, like way back in the day, big old clunky, ugly looking thing. Now they're, they got some sweet, sweet red dots now, but
for sure.
So
yeah, I love how everything is like. But, when I first got into guns too, I had a Vortex red dot that was mm-hmm. massive.
Yeah.
And it weighed like a brick. Uh-huh. And it worked. And you could drop it on its head 1,000 times and it would be just fine. And modern day optics, you can do the same too. But man, I tell you, it's a lot nicer. You have an optic that weighs ounces instead of pounds.
It's true.
So yeah.
True.
Yeah, we ran EOTEX on all of our stuff, and
man, you get the good stuff. Then I thought Marines only got garbage.
Well, see, we were joint, so we got funding through the White House Military Office. We're actually the only at the time, and I'm not sure if it's changed now, but we're the only unit in the Marine Corps that was allowed to use the MP5 Navy.
Oh wow!
Before I got there, there's kind of in the hierarchy, there's some Navy people above us, officer types, and the lore goes, it was long before me, but somehow pulled some strings and got us, you know, all MP5s, which,
dude, that's
my
awesome.
Goodness gravy, if you've never shot one of those, they're a blast. They're just one. So flat shooting, so easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can just hold the trigger down and put 30 rounds into the 10 ring without,
Okay, it's this week in guns, not last decade in guns.
I was going to joke that as we got to Brian, we were going to do the last century in guns.
Oh, last century.
Because that's the only things you own from 1895.
It's only handful.
So what kind of black powder gun did you buy this week?
Well, I mean, in the words
blunderbuss with a bayonet.
What was it? The guy from Active Self Protection. You're gun Amish.
Gun Amish.
Gun Amish. Well,
I'm not gun Amish. I'm gun practical. I don't have to bolt a
he
bunch of
goodies
on there.
He got blasted for that, man.
Yeah.
He got blasted.
But not by the Amish because they didn't find out.
They don't care. Yeah, they're not on it.
Nothing says get out of my house like rolling a nice cannon from the top of the
it's
stairs.
True.
Here's some great shot.
The Amish are onto something.
Oh, man. So, Brian, what did you do this week?
No, I picked up a Glock 45 recently. Nice. It's going to be the duty weapon for the
You said duty. Duty counter one.
I like duty. Duty counter two.
Duty counter two.
Anyway.
We're at five now, guys.
So I want to get some rounds through that. I was able to get out to the range on Friday with Manny, who's also on our safety team.
Yeah.
Oh, no
sure.
kidding. That's awesome.
Funny enough, his optic died, so he had to use irons.
That sounds about right.
But yeah. He had them as well. With
he
his
did
optic.
Because
he did.
They're backup.
So what you're saying is you could do
the
both.
Nubbins on the gun. Yeah, but if you just shoot the nubbins, you don't have to spend the extra on the dot.
Gotcha. So. But what if your nubbins break off?
That's called point shooting.
But what if you have to?
Even lawmen back in the day would just take the sights right off their gun so they're faster in the holster and they're still effective on target.
If your nubbins break off, there's been an IED blast, and I think you should probably worry about where your tourniquet is.
Thank you, John. Thank you. What John said.
So, Brian,
size can be really.
Were you telling the story about how you lost your nubbins?
My nubbins?
Somebody was telling me how they broke off a set of Glock.
No. So to clarify, that was in the last podcast, and I said specifically if you're going to open carry, switch to steel sights for a Glock. If you're going to conceal carry, the plastic ones are fine. But I have busted off, the half of a Glock sight on a door frame, just the plastic ones.
Yeah.
So definitely if you're going to open carry, bump up to steel sights.
And an optic.
Oh, man. So kind of going back to your range time with Manny, what'd you guys do?
We just worked some drills. I forgot my shot timer, so we're going to get on the timer. But he's a pretty decent shot.
He is.
He scored pretty well in the
he was in the top
qualifier,
10.
Yeah.
Top 10 of the qualifier of all 10
and
people.
He's only been
shooting
for a
totally
year.
Kidding. I'm totally kidding.
No, but he's only been shooting for a year.
I
gave him a couple tips, but without the timer there, it was kind of hard to dial him in. But it was just fun getting out there just shooting. Although when we showed up to the range, he pulled in and he flung his door open and shot the stapler at me. I was this is going to be a great range trip.
That's hilarious.
He's a super cool guy.
He's a funny guy. He's so reserved, too. That's really cool that you guys got to hang out and do that together.
Yeah,
he's a good guy. Awesome family. Mm-hmm. So cool. What would you, Philip? What'd you do?
I got some pants.
Expound on that.
Gun
what do you
pants?
Mean by that?
Gun pants.
I did. I actually,
did
so.
Gun patterns
I
on
I swear
them?
We talk about this every episode, but.
He's always buying pants.
I am almost always. Well, I mean. So I'm super tall. It's always a success story when I find pants that actually fit properly, number one. Number two, they were a set of Helicon Tech pants, specifically for a match that we're shooting this summer. Mm-hmm. But also I thought it'd be hilarious to bring up my This Week in Guns as a pair of pants. Also because I was born in the 20th century, I got a red dot this week as well, too. I got a Vortex Venom at a really good price that I'll be using for a canted optic. Again, I'm going to try it. I hate shooting canted optics for some reason. I just don't know where to zero them at, and I end up like spending like 5 years at the range trying to figure out the best distance to zero at, and I get frustrated when
You've been listening to a lot of Pac and Biggie? Then you get your gangster lean on when you shoot?
I think I do that all. That is my natural stance.
That will help.
Yes.
Have you considered going just above your optic?
We talk about this. We're back and forth about it.
Yeah. So I already run. My LPVO is already like a high LPVO mount anyway. So putting above that would be okay, but it would be the offset would be
foot or more. Mm-hmm.
I was joking that somebody should come out. And I actually hesitate to mention it on the podcast because somebody, he's gonna steal it because it's probably a terrible idea. But if you could make like a LPVO mount that had somehow you're able to slot like a red dot in the unit itself.
Who made that? There was
somebody who made this.
There's got to be.
There was. Was it? maybe Trigicon or Loophole. Somebody, I remember, I cannot think of it now, but it was basically a big square. And if you looked through the top of the optic, it was magnified. And then if you looked through the lower pane of it, it was actually just, or vice versa. I can't remember exactly which way it worked, but yeah, it was like a duel in the same.
Wild.
I don't think it ever caught on because I've not seen anybody ever run them. But
yeah, it's the same concept as the carry handle. Because like when that first, when they first started putting optics on ARs, it was all based off the carry handle.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So they would find out different mounts with that. So then you could run a dot on top and still come down for your irons. So it's not a new concept. It's just new technology.
For sure.
So
that makes sense. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. That I did not know that they made something like that. So I apparently failed. So maybe my idea is awful. Speaking of things that are not awful, Tyler, what did you do this week in guns?
Yeah. So last week,
Thursday.
Yeah. I took out a church member to the range. He's actually a new shooter. He started getting into guns probably in January. So all he took was this one safety class. And honestly, he was actually really good. Mm-hmm. Even shooting at 10 yards, he was getting primarily alphas. So he did a really good job. It was awesome being able to be with someone who is new, is curious, and wants to learn how to get into guns and be able to give him tiny little tips on how to get better. And I brought my AR as well, since I knew he was new at guns. Never shot AR, never seen an AR before. And he was like,
did he immediately want one?
Oh my goodness, he wants one. He loves it. Especially when I told him that, dude, there's like no kick to it. He's like, no way. And he shot, he's like, bro.
CNN
come
was
on, if you
wrong,
shoot a deer with it, there's nothing left of the deer.
Exactly.
Don't you listen to the view? How dare it?
I know, right?
It's as heavy as 10 boxes.
We talked about that. Mommy got a 9mm lung blaster. Yeah, right, President?
Your lungs.
Great president who also said, hey, let's
that's why
home defense, all you need is a double barrel shotgun and shoot it in disguise. Warning shots, like, yeah, you're defenseless now. Yes, very much.
True negligent
discharge. You have basically, I don't see the problem.
That scares them,
and
then your Secret Service shoots them from the roof.
Oh my goodness.
What? Exactly. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Are your dog?
Come on, Jack. Yeah, exactly. So now let's go ahead and kind of move on, and let's get to the meat of our podcast now. So, John, you are our special guest today, and Brian, of course.
I'm just a chaperone to make sure you don't take advantage of him.
I don't know. He's a Marine. He can kick both of all three of our butts right now without looking. So tell us about that story. Why the Marines?
So, I mean, from like the moment I was, you know, able to function, I was obsessed with military guns, you know, running around in the woods with all my buddies. Just,
do you come from a military background?
No, I was adopted into a family full of, you know, IT nerds and
hey, Mel.
I got nothing against it. I spent 5 years in data analytics, so I'm a data nerd myself. But
that's amazing.
Yeah. So no, I mean, you know, Grandpa's in World War II and Korea and stuff, but nothing major. You know, my one grandpa was in the Navy, welder on a ship, and the other was he could type, so he ended up just being a typist. Well. You know, everybody else was losing fingers and toes in the chosen reservoir, which, lucky for him, you know, wouldn't have him want to go through that. But, yeah, so I just was always obsessed with it and just G.I. Joes and, just your typical little boy. And then,
so why specifically Marines?
So, you know, it really started, my parents didn't want me to be, you know,
of course,
military, whatever. So they let me watch Saving Private Ryan when I was... And all that did was, like, after that beach scene, I was like, oh, this is happening.
I got to do this.
I am in. So, just since then, it was just kind of always in the back of my head. And then it kind of went away for a while. You know, I tried college for a year and a half, and it just wasn't.
For sure.
Wasn't the right time for me, you know. It, just a little bit of a waste of money there. And, you know, it was like, we're going to go in the military, and if you're going to go anywhere, it's, you know, just the Marines are the Marines, you know. You almost don't have to recruit. That's why we're the only branch without a recruiting crisis right now. Yes, that is right.
they still value men.
I mean, I talked to, you know, I did the whole, I'm going to talk to other people, but it's just the Marine Corps, you know.
For sure.
You're going to do, as my mindset's always been, you're going to do something, go big, go home, you know, kind of thing. So I just compelled to go the Marine Corps route. And, you know, it was 2004 or 2005 when I'm making the decision. So, you know, war's on.
yeah,
like crazy. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go, and might as well, you know, go with the big dogs, right? And it's kind of my mindset at that point. You know, now, I mean, there's amazing Army units, amazing Air Force components, all kinds of...
Space Force.
Yeah. Oh, Space Force. Yeah. Fighting them aliens, baby.
That's right.
I just want a phaser.
And the most important division of any, like, branch of the military is the cyber division. I just want to point that out. That's the most hardcore,
honestly, I'll tell you
difficult
what.
Difficult division out there.
Today.
The you want to start ninjas. Getting down that road. I mean, you look at Ukraine right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the chubby little kid who's been playing Fortnite his whole life, who can run a drone through a 3-inch by 3-inch square, is 10 times more valuable than a line company. Honestly,
there you know, we go. Wow,
it's completely changed the face of warfare. And you got, I mean, nerds are about to take the battle space.
Man, and I knew all real, that half-life would serve me well, you know, someday.
I've never thought of it that way. That's it's, such a good point. Wow.
That scares. I mean,
yes, it does.
That terrifies me. Like,
very
if
much.
I'm sitting in a line company, you know, trying to maneuver, and I've got some kid, you know, 40 miles back that nobody knows is sitting there underneath the ground
100 miles away
with thermals and the ability to just hover over top of me and take his opportunity to, you know, drop a, you know, a mortar or whatever, a 60 millimeter mortar off of a quadcopter, and just,
and there's zero humanity because he's just going for the kill confirm counter on his
screen. Yeah. I'm literally going back to my Call of Duty days where it's like, and imagine if your comms are on, he's like, ha ha, you noob, and he thinks it's a game. It's like, no, you just killed someone.
Can I say the word teabag on your podcast?
They did that with the movie Gamer, where they could like control people.
Yeah,
it was like that. It was creepy.
Oh, that's
well,
funny.
And it's wild to me that we went from technology that was exclusive to like the top tier militaries in the world like 20, 30 years ago to like, no, everybody's got drones now.
Yeah. Come on, it's, I mean, my son's got one that's, you know, I mean, he can spot lock it. He can fly it around wherever he wants. It's got an awesome little camera on it. I still haven't figured out how to weaponize it, but I mean...
North American
and nor will I ever, Mr. FBI agent who I know is listening to me, I will never do that. I'm a good citizen, I promise.
So on this episode, or on this podcast, we talk about a lot of snacks and food. So clearly you're going to set it up for snack delivery purposes.
Absolutely.
That's what I heard. Snacks.
That's what I heard.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You're going to slowly give them diabetes over time.
I like that. Skittles. Yeah, the slow play method. Yeah.
So kind of going back on track. So Marines.
Yep. No, what hang on. I got a really important question. Okay, so I'm in your shoes.
Yep.
I am a Marine, and I'm gonna go out, and I'm like the baddest of all bad guy, like dudes out there, right?
Okay.
Why the White House?
Well, you know, that's actually part of the story. So I joined. I was gonna go be an O3, you know, infantry.
For
so
sure.
You basically, you know, I was like, if I'm gonna be a Marine, I'm gonna be an infantry Marine.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And it's just my mindset at that point. So went into boot camp, signed as a. As just, you know, standard O3, you can't pick your actual MOS. They kind of give that to you, you know, whether you're a machine gunner or
That was actually a question. A mortarman. So they just kind of tell you, you don't need any input at all.
No, so you do in kind of like your main, you know, like if you're going to be a tanker, you sign up to be a tanker. If you're going to be admin, you sign up to be admin. If you're going to be, you know, different type of MOSs, well, not they killed the tank out of all of the Marine Corps. Sad day.
Oh, wow.
Is what it is. They're trying to go smaller and leaner and more, you know, what we used to be. But yeah, so you basically go into boot camp knowing kind of just the general trajectory of the way that you're going to go.
Yeah.
After boot camp, then you, if you're in infantry MOS, you go to SOI, the School of Infantry. If you're at any other MOS, you go to, I think it's ITB. It's been a long time. But so they basically like they teach you just like a little bit of you know infantry tactics, and then you go off to your actual school of you know where you're learning to be commo, or you're learning your tank, or you're learning your you know motor T, whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
Infantry. Then you spend, I think it's 3 months. It's been many many moons. I was you know did that back in 2006.
You're old.
I am old. I was trying to remember the transition period, but yeah, I went in and...
you're old and you transitioned.
February of 2006.
Great impression.
Exactly. Hey,
one of the first. Wow.
Yeah. That's from don't ask, don't tell to...
Good on you, man.
Hey, you know, I'm proud of the new me.
and for the record, like, best. There's a reason why, like, I think, like, what you were doing was really freaking cool. I mean, so,
you know,
like, how do you get, okay, so my question is more along the lines of, like, how the heck did you even, like, get something cool like
I
this?
Fell, Grunta. I fell butt backwards into it, to be perfectly honest. So, in boot camp, you know, just going through the chaos of boot camp, they all of a sudden, you know, set everybody down, drill instructor got up in the quarterback and just read off a list of names of guys, and it was like, there's a special screening and you guys all have to go to it. So, long story short, they basically took anybody who had a little bit of college.
Okay.
Yeah. And there, I don't know what other criteria, but that's kind of where, you know, how I got picked. It was like anybody who had some college, anybody who had certain things, pulled us onto a room, and then there are some guys that just kind of gave a presentation of like, hey, there's this program that you could get into. You know, it's for infantry MOS only. So if you're not in infantry MOS, you know, raise your hand, get out of here. Do any of you guys want to deploy immediately? A bunch of guys raise their hand, get out of here. Any of you guys have a felony? You know, back then, 2006, you know, Marine Corps felony wasn't necessarily scary back then. Mm-hmm. Guys raise their hands, all right, get out of here. Anybody got a kid? Raise their hand, get out of here. You know, just question after question after question of guys, you know, just kicking people out. And then there was a small group left, and they're like, okay, so there's this thing called the Yankee White Program. It's for Marines who will be, you know, either involved in the going to either Camp David or to the White House Communications Agency. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I don't know if there was some others involved too, but those were kind of the main two in the program that I got in. Do you want to do this? Yes or no? And, you know, some guys were like, nah, I'd rather just go to a line company, or I'd rather, you know, do this or that. And me and one of the other guys I was in in boot camp with were in there together, and we were both just kind of like, sounds kind of, I don't know. You know, they didn't give us a whole lot of information. Yeah, just a little bit of, we're like, hey, give it a go, right? You know, so then you go to the next stage, and then you go back to the chaos of boot camp, and then forget all about it for a little bit, and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, you know, you got to go talk to these people. And so then you get into a room and they kind of give you a better presentation of what the actual program is. You know, I'll show you some slides of some post cool guy nonsense of like, you know, I mean, back then it was goofy, you know, black gear and like, hey, look at us, we're a SWAT team kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it all looked. It was, it's
well, were you a SWAT team?
Not technically. I mean, you know,
cooler than a SWAT team.
Yeah, it's everything is basically, you know, a lot of CQB stuff and everything, because we're all in, you know, it's all
okay. So that's actually security type that's stuff, super interesting. So then for that role, because you were specifically in the security force,
yes,
for the White House Communications.
Yep.
So in that role, you are literally training. Like something happens, like you got to be able to defend.
Yeah. So the place we are the guns behind, you know, for the safety of that entire top secret facility. So,
yeah, wow.
But yeah, so then you go before a board and you're in boot camp still, and you've got all these, and all you know is terror and fear of anybody who even seems to be remotely in authority, you know. So you go before this board, they ask you a bunch of questions, and there's a Navy psych there and everything, and they're asking you, you know, just this, that, and the other. And if you make it through all that, and, you know, they think you're, you know, functionally stable. Cause I mean, part of that security clearance, you're allowed to carry a firearm next to the president. So, you know, it's I think it's a category 2 top secret SCI level clearance. I'm not exactly sure what cat 2 means, but that's
stable.
That's
genius.
The thing that
I
was,
heard
you know,
stable genius.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. So, and then from there it's like, all right, you know, sign this paper saying you want to do it. Then it switches you to, then you have a B billet. So you have like your main MOS, and then you can have a B billet, like drill instructor's a B billet, or, you know, certain other things. You have a secondary MOS. And so that's 8152, which is a Marine Corps Security Forces. So in 8152, you also have the guys who guard the nuclear sub bases, and then the FAST teams. Mm-hmm. So the Fleet Anti-Terrorism, can't remember what FAST actually stands for, but I think they actually took it out of Bahrain, but there was a base in Bahrain and there was one in the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. And these guys are basically Marine Corps SWAT team, right?
Gotcha.
Their job is to, like, if the embassy gets, you know, too hot, they'll kick a FAST team in there. If they need to evac people from something, they kick a FAST team in. They're kind of just the super QRF, you know, quick reaction force for, you know, kind of whatever area they need extra guys who can get into a building, secure it, get people out type stuff. Wow. So that's the other side of that MOS that I was in. So
what about dual wielding MP5s? That's later.
We'll get to dual wielding MP5s because it is a beautiful thing.
I definitely need to hear the story later.
But yeah, so you know, get through boot camp, go through all that screening. Unbeknownst to me, at that point, they start your top secret security screening. So
they don't tell you.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, you're just...
You figure you're gonna, but...
And you don't know anything at that point. You are, you know, just a terrified, scared, beaten, abused little animal that's not even human anymore.
Sounds about right, yeah.
You don't even have a name at that point. You're just this recruit.
Yep.
And then so, you know, as time goes, you get more information. But at that point, they start... The Office of Personnel Management starts doing the security clearance checks. And, I mean, they called people from that I went to grade school with. They talked to random people from my parents' church. They went up and down my road, talked to people.
Ex-girlfriends.
Everybody. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, they're doing the most, I mean, they're making sure that you're as pure as a wind-driven snow.
And, wow.
You know,
so you what got I'm hearing is that you're as pure as a wind-driven snow.
Then.
For then, public then. Purposes, yes, absolutely. Pure as the wind-driven snow.
There you go.
All the way around. Now, back then, I was a little goody-two-shoes, so it worked out well. but... Yeah, I mean, and you get guys, you know, like after all your training, you go to 8th and I, which is kind of, if you've ever heard, the silent drill team and the president's own band. It's where the commandant's house is. It's right inside Washington, D.C., kind of in the streets. So on 8th Street and I Street, hence 8th and I. And it's just kind of the dog and pony show of the Marine Corps. You know, all the there's a bunch of fancy schmancy generals that live, you know, along the barracks row there. And it's every... senior enlisted guy thinks he's going to be the next sergeant major of the Marine Corps there. So it's an absolute nightmare to be there. But you sit there in the guard company while you're waiting for your clearance to come through. So, and then every once in a while, you know, we'd be getting ready for guard duty. And all of a sudden, you know, our gunny would pop out and be like, hey, you know, Smith, were you going to tell anybody you were doing an 8-ball of coke on the freaking weekends, and you know, and whoa, you didn't think anybody could find that out? And so guys would get punched out to the fleet, wow. You know, for stuff like that, yeah. Randomly as the clearance stuff comes through. And then once your clearance secures, then you either go to Camp David, or you go to the White House Communications Agency.
Yep.
White House Communications Agency is like the golden egg, right? Oh, Camp yeah. David wow. runs like a regular, you know, infantry company basically up there. It's you know, they're running drills, they're all super buttoned up and you know, cause there's dignitaries and the president's always there, and they just, it's really buttoned up and tight and not a fun place to be. Cause
what is Camp David?
So Camp David is the presidential retreat.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, the president will go, it's been there for, I mean, I don't know when they put it together, probably in like the 40s or 30s, 40s, 50s, something like that. But, and there's always contingents of Marines up there that guard it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got, you know, they're just basically act like an infantry line unit.
Yeah. Did you ever get to take the secret tunnel from Camp David to the White House?
That's like
forever long.
So I can neither confirm nor to try whether Megatron is or is not buried underneath Camp David, but no. I never actually got to Camp David. Uh-huh. You know, we would hide from that place because, you know, president could on a whim be like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm going to take this guy over to Camp David. If you're on leave, if you're, you know, on a 3-day weekend, if you're on your weekend, if you just worked 12 days straight, you're on duty and you're on duty until he's gone. Everybody, wow. You know, I mean, it's from what everybody told the horror stories of, it was for not sure. A fun place to be. And White House Communications Agency is kind of it's kind of the big boy. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, the big boy network. The golden egg, like you were saying.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, you get treated a little bit with better respect earlier, and, you know, you're kind of more on your...
I believe it.
It's more OFP.
OFP?
Yeah. Own...
Oh, yeah, okay.
So again,
flake program.
So now that you've gone through boot camp, all of your clearances, and what was that first day like when you finally got to the White House? What was that like?
So... I'm trying to think back to, so it was a huge, huge relief because, you know, you get, once your clearance pops, it's like, okay, are you going to Camp David? Are you going to,
for sure.
You know, yep. And a group of guys will get picked at the same time. So And, you know, okay, they'll call, you know, this guy are going to Camp David, and, you know, and then I got selected for Waka. So it was like, oh, sweet. Okay, I get out of Marine Barracks, Washington, which is the greatest thing of all time. And then, you know, get to the unit I was hoping to get to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get there. I'm trying to remember when I was, you know, super boot there. You get in, you sit down, you shut up, and you listen for a while, you know, because mm-hmm. you don't know anything. You got to take a whole bunch of, you know, training and tests and things. And if you don't pass that training, once you get to the unit, too, there's, you know, learning all your SOPs and all your extra, you know, you got your general orders, but all your, you know, extra orders and everything and how everything runs. And you take a bunch of tests on all that stuff. And if you don't pass it, they just punch you to the fleet. So that was beyond nerve-wracking. You just sit there and study and study and study and study and study and study and, you know, pray to God you don't get kicked to the fleet right away because you're like, I kind of want to do this thing, you know.
That's crazy.
And then you get put into a team. At that point, we had two teams of, you know, a decent amount of guys. I don't know if I can talk about exactly how many guys are there. But, you know, you've got a couple sections and, you know, you shift off on training days and then working days and guys over, you know, going on trips and everything. So two different sections to the group, and then you become the new guy. You stand all the crappy posts, you do, you know, you clean all the things, you do all the stuff nobody else wants to do until the new guys show up and you're no longer the new guy anymore.
There we go.
I think Jocko talked about that. His first assignment when he was like a full blown SEAL was scrubbing toilets and washing floors.
You're a SEAL.
You're nothing.
You're a seal.
You're like, hey, please hand me my MP. Oh, here's my toilet brush.
Exactly.
Here's a toothbrush. Grab the toilet.
When everybody else around you is also that thing, nobody cares that you're that thing.
Right, that's exactly. I mean, that's what John Lovell talks about when he first became a Ranger. He's like, everyone else is a Ranger. You have to prove yourself.
Like, you are nothing.
Exactly. Like, I'm a Ranger now. I got the patch. It's like, you got to do a few more things first.
Neat. Prove it.
Exactly.
So, for those who are listening that don't know, what does the White House Communications Agency do?
Yeah, so it is a it's a subsidiary organization of the White House, operated by the White House Military Office, and it's a joint base. So there's people from the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, all of their specialties. I'm not exactly sure what all of them do. You know, I'm sure there's some intel guys there. There's some, you know, a lot of comm people. Yeah. So the main, and a lot of,
IT nerds.
And like public relations and stuff as well.
Yeah.
So there's like all the
people.
Camera people and all that kind of stuff too. You know, all the people are doing all the photo op stuff and doing all the video and all that kind of stuff. They all run through the office as well. So you got all kinds of different people of all those different MOSs, and the job is to just support, you know, the White House, both, you know, CONUS and, you know, in the continental United States and overseas.
What is CONUS?
Continental. I don't even know CONUS. CONUS outside of continental United States.
Gotcha. Yep.
But so, you know, anytime the president travels anywhere, there's a group of people that travel with all, you know, the secure communications, the secure everything, you know. There's you see the convoy that goes, and then there's all kinds of other people as well. So the president goes to California, someone from Waka is going to go to California with them, with whatever set of gear that they need for that mission to, you know, support via whatever comm things that they need. We didn't do any domestic travel. Mm-hmm. Because I think mainly because, you know, military stuff can't operate outside of the base in the United States. So, but anytime the president would go overseas, a contingent would go out. You know, they basically mobilize a city every time the president leaves the country. And you basically take over a couple hotels, and you turn an area into a SCIF, which is Secure Compartmented Information Facility, which is where all the secure commo stuff can go on. You know, a lot of the way that they build them inside these hotels is amazing. I was watching people punch 3-inch holes through, you know, multi-room suites in the Ritz-Carlton in Istanbul, Turkey. because you're essentially setting up a full communications array overseas that's fully secured, fully, you know, impervious to you know, the outside world that the White House can talk to whoever they need to safely and securely. So, and our job while overseas was to secure that skiff. Only the people who are allowed in that skiff, you know, there's a specific list of people with a specific clearance level that are allowed in there.
Did you say what skiff means?
Yes. Okay. Secure compartmented information facility. Yes. So basically an area where only certain people are allowed in that has very, very specific sensitive information in it.
Yep.
And only certain people can know that information. So we basically were that, you know, last line of defense against somebody getting in there that shouldn't be in that area.
Mm-hmm. And you guys are armed the whole time while you're like protecting this space, even though you're in different countries. Is that part of just being part of the like president's detail, or is there, you maybe can't talk about that. But.
Yeah. I mean, depending on what, when and where, you have the means to secure that place. Okay. I'll say that much. Yeah. yes. you have the means to do your job.
For sure.
Things change, you know, ROEs change depending on where you're at, which country you're in, you know. I mean, right. Obviously, you know, if the president goes to Iraq, guys will go to Iraq with him. Yep. While the war was on, you know, you're in full battle rattle and you're doing your thing like you're in a war zone, because you are. You know, when you're in certain other countries, their laws are a little bit funny depending on, you know. So yeah, I mean, things are held, you know, dealt with accordingly.
Yeah.
We'll just say that. But yeah, so, and you can be there for, you know, a few days. You could be there for a few weeks. You know, the nice thing was you never really know, because of the security protocols and that it's, you know, a compartmented information. You don't know when the president's going to be there.
Yeah.
So you're there when you're there. You get word that he's going to be there when he's going to be there. Then everything locks down hard and everybody puts suits on, you know, and it's all business all the time until he's wheels up, and then you can kind of, you know, decompress a little bit and chill. But you'd always end up with a few days to, you know, even potentially a week where you've got nothing to do, because, you know, until there's a skiff set up, I don't have a job in country. So it's like, all right, well, we'll see you guys, you know, I check back in on Wednesday. And we're like, oh, well, sweet, I'm in Bangkok, Thailand right now with three of my, you know, best buddies, or however many guys are, you know, go on trip with me. And we're just going to go hang out in the town. And so, you know,
try
I got
to go to jail.
when they said wow. See the world, you actually got to see
I
the
did.
World.
I got very lucky. I got to I actually went to Istanbul twice. I don't know how I got lucky with that, but Istanbul is an incredible city. You know, the first trip was actually a vice presidential trip that I went on. So they don't take that quite as aggressive, I guess, as when the president goes. It's a little bit more laid back of a thing. So we got a decent amount of downtime to, you know, we just went all over the city, saw the Hagia Sophia, saw, you know, there's... Just explored the whole, went to the Grand Bazaar, went to, you know, I mean, it's just a cool, cool city with tons of history.
And got paid to do it.
Yeah, and got paid to do it. Wow. Yeah, buddy. And I was staying in the Ritz-Carlton as a Marine.
That's amazing.
While all of my buddies are dodging IEDs in Iraq, here's my soft little keister. Eating nice food. And yeah, so, I mean, you know, and then went to Peru and to Thailand, and you know, it was a good time. I mean, you know, you see a lot of cool stuff, you get a little bit of downtime. It was really an absolute honeypot of a job for that time frame. I mean, being that I was joining to be an infantry Marine, and I think I would have ended up at 3-5, and that's where most of the guys went, and they punched straight out and were in
so with all that experience and travel, why'd you get out?
Twofold. It's the Marine Corps is a vicious animal. I'll tell you that.
I mean,
it's, you know, it's an absolute wolf pack.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, any weakness is exploited. It's just a bunch of hard dudes being hard dudes with hard dudes, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Nope. Go ahead. Nope. Go ahead. Go ahead.
This is a family. This is a family.
But, you know, and I was, so at the end, MARSOC was actually just kind of gaining steam.
Okay.
And they...
For those who don't know, what is that?
Marine Corps Special Operations Command. So okay. Now Raider Battalion.
Okay.
But they were basically taking anybody with a combat MOS, with mm-hmm. a security clearance, who had good scores, you know, yeah. good rifle scores, good PT scores, that kind of stuff. And they were just, because they're SOCOM, they were just popping orders for people.
Yep.
And me and a few other guys got popped orders to go down to MARSOC.
Yep.
And it was like, I don't know if I really did want to play the MARSOC game or not. But, you know, my staff sergeant is like, well, if you deny orders, they're going to send you wherever the heck they feel like it. And usually they get pretty pissed off. And so you're going to end up in Okinawa unaccompanied and, you know, your life's going to suck. So just take the orders. So ended up going down there and kind of hearing him out. And it was going to be another 6-year commitment. And at the time I just married my ex-wife and she was pretty adamant about me getting out. And,
for sure. Makes sense.
Looking back on it, it would have been fun to at least go through the NDOC and see if it was a thing. But, you know, also I'm, you know, looking back on the way the war has transpired and everything. Yeah. And I feel very lucky to have been blessed with the path that I did go down during that time frame. You know, a lot of buddies that didn't have that same experience and, you know, are struggling with it to this day.
Of course. Right. Yep.
And, you know, I actually really struggled with that for a while when I got out because combat action ribbon is everything. I mean, you're barely, you know, at that point in time, especially being combat MOS, like to just, whether it's true or not, the mindset is, you know, I'm not even barely even a Marine right now. You know, I don't have a combat action ribbon, you know, how do you get anywhere with no car? You know, and it was just the thing. Like if you didn't see combat, you're a boot. Didn't matter what you did, how you're just a useless boot.
Yep.
You know, so, and I really struggled that when I got out for a while of dealing with that. So, you know, if anybody's listening to this that did their time, did their job, you know, and didn't get in the, you know, in the sandbox and get shot at, you know, that was the goal. That was like, you know, and it's what you do. That's why you join.
Yeah.
But then when life takes you another way, you know, it's not, you're not less than, you're not. Useless entity. So if anybody's listening and they feel that way, you know, it's not that way, you know. You got to shift your mindset and be like, you know what, another time, another place.
Exactly.
And you do live with the fact that, you know, how would I have reacted in that situation? Because you always want to know, because, you know, I mean, you train for it and it's like you never get to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I've been training for, never get to see it.
The dudes that actually go, I mean, isn't it like for one infantryman in the field, there's still like 40 dudes supporting that one guy.
Right.
Yeah, but if you go in as an 03,
yeah,
you know,
you're expecting.
I am expecting to be an 03-11.
Yeah.
You know, one of the guys that's, you know, the one in 10 that is actually in it.
What's crazy is because Phil and I, we have a mutual friend who is a Marine, prior Marine. Okay, I know once Marine, but either way. And he was infantry, and he tells stories about how he's been in multiple life or death situations where he was the only one who survived.
Yeah.
Like 4 or 5 times.
And it is, it's not something anybody should go through. I mean, it's, be very careful wanting war.
Exactly.
Be very careful wanting war, because I have...
forget where it originated, but it's all young men dream of war until they get there.
Yeah. So true. Yeah.
I mean, the amount of phone calls I've gotten at, you know, 3 a.m. implying if you didn't pick up, you know, that, I mean, it's a real, real, real thing. That guys that see stuff, some guys are unaffected. Some guys love it. Nobody leaves unscarred. Nobody leaves unchanged.
It's unnatural.
No,
right. I mean, yes, there are men, especially, are inclined to, you know, want to battle and want to fight, no matter what it is. But it's not. I don't interrupt you, but it's not natural to see the
stuff.
No,
I mean, to have your best friends that, you know, you are more than friends, or brothers, you know,
exactly,
and to go through that traumatic situation of losing one of them, and you know, just the massive amount of survivor's guilt people have. And,
yes.
Yep.
You know, all the things that come along with it. Just be very, very careful going to war. yeah. Nikki Haley. I don't know if we can get political or not, but
no, it's totally fine.
We are past election, so we're good. Yeah.
Oh, hey, there we go.
When we started this podcast, that was one of the things we talked about, was that it was okay to go that direction, and chances are we probably all agree. So
yeah,
for sure.
But no, I'm just a dude, but I feel like everybody's got a role to play. And it sounds like you had a role to play and you just happened to do really good with it. So I don't, you know.
It's a vital thing. It's security for a top secret facility associated with keeping the White House safe and secure and able to communicate.
And
you know,
you did
so
your
it's,
job.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I have no regrets now. I have just, you know, being young and getting out and really going through learning how to, you know, transition out of that mindset, becoming a civilian again, not having that just absolute violent, aggressive wolf pack mindset.
Yes. Yeah.
And then...
In a sense, you had to go through, like, civilian boot camp now to retrain yourself.
It was an interesting experience. I remember, like, I got my first job as just a security guard for Fifth Third Bank.
Yep.
And I, you know, I go in and I meet my new boss and he's nice to me. And I had no idea. I mean, it was...
What do I do with this?
Genuinely. Like, he was just a genuinely kind person.
Why aren't you yelling at me?
And I had no idea how to react to it. Because it's not... There was no, like... anger, rage, get out of my face, I hate you, you know, like... Yeah.
It's like, what's up, John, how you doing?
Yeah, man? Hey, how you doing? Like,
thanks for how's your day? Today. Thanks for coming
in. Anything what I can get for you?
Exactly, like, what is happening
are you
here?
Comfy
why?
Right
what
now?
Did I do wrong?
Do you need a water
like,
bottle?
Like, am I getting fired? Like, what? You're being nice to me, I don't know how to do this. Like, can you just at least, like, slap me and tell me I'm ugly or something? I don't know, you know?
So, Brian, when you're at work and John is really nice to you, do you get worried?
I'm not nice to him ever, though.
Good.
So,
okay.
So you yell at him and slap him? But it's
different. I can neither confirm nor deny.
I can confirm it's all by request.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, you know, listen.
There is, like, a huge difference between, from what you're kind of saying with, and you know, we on the outside have never witnessed or experienced this, but there's such a huge difference between like people who have when you have served and when you're in that space versus like civilian life.
Yeah,
it's like night and day, right? And I have experience at both ends of that, which is extremely fascinating to me to hear you talk about this and the way that making that transition.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know,
how many times have you transitioned?
I mean, I got the opportunity for one more, okay?
One
more. But.
I mean, you're former military, so, you know, you get, like, VA, so they probably just pay for it.
I think for free. So. They probably encourage it, and then you can get back in and go Space Force, but, or Coast Guard.
That's a good point. So there's, like, in the White House communications, there's...
This went downhill.
There's Navy, there's Army, there's Air Force. Yep. But I don't know, there's still Coast Guard.
Well, I don't...
The thing, though, is for Coast Guard, you have to be 6 foot tall. Because then if the boat sink, you can walk to shore.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. So I guess kind of back on, anyway, so yeah, back on track. Back on track. So you talked about your transition of going back to becoming a civilian. Mm-hmm. Like, how long did it really take for you to...
You know, I mean,
war scars you serving all of that, all the PTSD. But, like, when were you like, I'm a civilian? Like,
yeah, you know, it's an interesting... I'm trying to think back to that time frame. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't have any PTSD issues or anything like that, but just in general, the idea of going from this hyper aggressive male, you're constantly fighting each other.
Yes.
You know, I mean, just it, whether it be for fun or for training or whatever, you're just constantly fighting.
Yes.
You're, you know, just brutally aggressively verbally abusive to each other.
Yep.
You know, and that's how you show each other love. If somebody's nice to you, that means they don't like you. Or you're just an absolute turd, and then we really do hate you. Normally, you can figure out which one that is. Sometimes you're not really sure. But to get out, and all of a sudden, it's like you're expected to have this modicum of composure and kindness and niceness. And it's like, I don't know how to do that. Like, I don't know how to be nice to you. Like, I don't know how not to be aggressive to you when you're screwed something up. And, you know, I mean, turn the NCO on and throw the knife hand in your chest and tell you you're this, that, and the other, you know, and it's just, it's kind of, I at least had the the good fortune of being around a lot of very important people all the time. So you kind of do have to have that ability to to get yourself back into, you know, more of a decorum because you've got White House staff and people all around you all the time. So, you know.
Yeah, they don't understand what it's like.
And not even a little bit. It's it's amazing. Yeah. But it just takes time and effort. And it's, you know, I mean, it took a long time for me to get. And I'm still not the same person, of course, you know what I mean? No. It's there's elements of that that never leave you. I mean, the cult never gets out of your blood. It's,
of course,
you know, and the Marine Corps is a cult. It is not a a branch of the military. It is a cult,
And it's such a like formative, not to get like, you know, in the weeds, but it's such a formative period of like most young men's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I went in there as a child, you know. Right.
And how old were you when you went 18?
I went in at 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your brain was still developing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Your brain was still developing when you got out.
It was. I know.
That's crazy. Transitioning, another transition we're going to make here. I'm really curious because we are a firearms podcast.
Yep.
You mentioned prior to like stepping in, as we talked a little bit jokingly about the dual wielding MP5.
Please tell me that story.
But, and shotgun.
But I obviously, there's a difference with the equipment that you had available to you as a security team within the White House Communications Agency versus what a normal Marine has. Like, what kind of tool toys are you playing with?
Yep. So,
and then please tell us the MP5 story.
That's a great question. That is a great question.
So, basically, we ran, I mean, you know, pretty much a standard loadout. We were in, you know, mostly soft armor just because we're a, you know, we had hard plates. A lot of guys, the React teams and stuff, we would wear hard plates.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
a lot of times you're just wearing soft armor and, you know, a drop holster with an M9, Beretta M9 on it. And then depending on the post, you know, vehicle post, you have a shotgun with slugs just so you can stop a vehicle with, you know, shot to the engine.
Okay, hang on real quick here.
Yep.
So there's a really good friend of mine. We joke back and forth. He's former Air Force, but we joke, and I know he's going to listen to this, and I always joke about, but can it stop an engine? Like, will it go into an engine block? And it sounds like the answer. So I just heard from a Marine that the answer is yes.
Well, I will tell you a Benelli M1014, if you take all, you know, 8 slugs and throw them directly into an engine block, you probably would be able to stop it.
Awesome. You hear that, Nathan?
You know, I mean, you can shoot an engine block with a 50 cal and it'll still run, especially if it's a Hilux.
Yeah.
you know, Toyota, I mean, it's a measure, right?
Right.
You know, if you're trying to shoot through glass, you know, obviously shooting
slugs
with
do great
with
through
a
glass.
With a shotgun, you know, it's just, it's better than a 5.56.
Right.
It's for that type of application. So yeah, you'd have at a vehicle entry post, you'd have a, you know, a Benelli. And then we were the only unit in the Marine Corps that actually was allowed to use the MP5 Navy. Maybe some SOCOM stuff or you know, old Ricky Recon guys may have had it, but as far as the lore was around us, we were the only ones allowed to actually use the MP5. Somebody worked some angles being a joint base and got them for us. So the MP5 Navy is the one that actually has, you know, you see the ones with like the big fat long buttstock on them. That's fixed. Mm-hmm. The MP5 Navy is the one that collapses down. It's the kind of
cool
version. One.
Yeah.
You know, so it's select fire.
No suppressed.
Oh. No, just regular old, you know.
Still cool though.
Even random iron sights, you know, that's actually that circle peep sight.
That's
is
what
pretty
you
slick.
Need. Getting the job done.
I'm saying,
done.
You know, that H&K knows how to make a sight. Like if you
optics waste your time.
But yeah, they are just a beautiful, beautiful gun. I mean, you know, that delayed roller blowback, they're just smooth. They're just, even on full auto, they're super controllable.
That's amazing.
Super hyper maneuverable.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I have a question though.
Yes.
How many times did the iron run out of batteries?
You know, I'm going to go with a never.
But, thank you. Thank
but
you.
Then, you know, yeah. we had M4s, obviously, you know, full auto M4s and EOTechs on those.
Yep. Yep. You mentioned that before the show, we were talking about that. Mm-hmm. And I know like traditionally, I believe, and there's always applications for stuff, but the EOTech, I'm assuming there's a reason why that was selected versus using like an ACOG.
Yep. So ACOG is, you know, usually for intermediate range.
Yep.
You know, where you're getting engagements between, you know, 50 and 100, 200, 300 up to, you know, 500 yards, you know, suppressive fire and things. Our job was pretty much all internal security for the most part, or very, you know, close. I mean,
yeah.
The, you know, the distances at which you're shooting is 100 and in. You're on a, you know, when we're at the Waka compound, it's on Bowling Air Force Base. You're on a base. So if anything were to ever pop off and you needed to, you know, defend that facility, you're not shooting more than, you know,
right,
100, 150 yards. And that's, you know, easy gravy with an EO.
Yeah.
And then, you know, MP5s inside buildings and stuff. And most of what we did was inside buildings. So if you ever had to, you know, engage, pretty much everything we did was CQB related. So, you know, you just become kind of a CQB, I wouldn't say CQB master. I mean, that's, you know,
it's your job.
That's for the tier one guys. Yeah. But, you know, you get really, really good at you know, shoot, move, and communicate through a building.
Yep.
So, you know, just all the working corners and, you know, speed, surprise, violence of aggression, moving into rooms, mm-hmm. you know, and all that stuff. So I was just train with all that kind of stuff. And then a lot of concealed pistol work.
Yep.
And a lot of, you know, open pistol work and stuff too, because that's kind of our primary. So, you know, when you're overseas, there's a lot of...
How often are you doing the concealed pistol thing as a Marine?
Very, very rarely. We, you know, unless you're in some type of, you know, secret squirrely kind of stuff. Basically, it was us that I know of, because we're plain clothes, mm-hmm. you know, as part of the kind of the White House apparatus. You don't want to, you know, you're not having uniform Marines standing around. We were in plain clothes.
I did not know that.
In suits, okay. You know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So we looked just like, you know, everybody else from the crew, except, interesting. You know.
That's so cool.
I'm imagining you this whole time up to this point being
desert camis with my Kevlar and my,
I know, yeah. Now I'm second guessing everything about that I knew about anything.
Sitting at the Ritz right there, yeah. Your dress blues, you know.
Yeah. No, we were all plain clothes. So yeah, it's all very, you know, low vis.
Yep.
With everything, which obviously, because sense. You're,
yeah. Were you issued like a suit then?
Or did
you
we got an allowance. So, okay. You know, you rock out to Joseph A. Bank, yeah. And then you know, there's one in DC that pretty much everybody who is in that,
it's DC.
Yeah.
So,
so, but there's one that they kind of point you to, and they'll actually sew like a gun patch in. So it like hides a little better and stuff like that. Cause you know, we're carrying an M9.
Yeah.
So you basically have, you know, like an old, rotary desk phone in your
pretty day. Much. Hey, I've carried an M9 many times, but it's not that bad.
Hey, okay, you know. So how many times did you run a John Wick when you were at the Taylor's?
Well, you know,
and can you order your bulletproof?
Super like, bulletproof. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think he was still in the mob at that point in time.
Fair.
So
yeah.
You know,
well, they were using the Continental, right?
Like, that is,
you
know, true. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Are they handing out gold coins in the core?
Yeah. How many gold coins do you
I'll say John Wick, I can neither confirm nor deny any of this. Redacted.
And I have another question for you. Mm-hmm. So M9.
Yep.
Dual wielding
MP5. Okay. Yeah, so anyway,
before we get to that,
though. I didn't go before. Well,
hang on, because okay, hang on. Okay, so
I will stab you with this.
This will lead into that. I promise you, I'll work.
I don't know.
Transition. Okay, so M9.
Yep.
The Navy MP5.
Yep.
M4s with EOTech.
Yep. Just passed MP5.
Benelli's.
Yep. The M1014.
When you guys would go into the armory, how long did the angel sing for when you opened the door?
It was. It's actually constant. It's amazing. Actually,
it's just always on.
You just hear the. Yep. And it just gets louder when you know, flip it to the giggle switch.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So
how often did you cry when you got to shooting full auto?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That brings me to the
MP5 story. So we had a huge ammo allotment. And it's
clearly,
if you don't use it, you lose it. You know, I mean, we shot constantly. I mean, then you go to the range all day. You're shooting at least 1,000 rounds.
That's awesome.
Just out of your pistol, you know, a lot of the times.
Wait, did you say 1,000 rounds
a
day?
Yeah, okay, yeah. You're shooting a lot.
Well, you're saying like, just out of your pistol, you'd still shoot other stuff in addition.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, depending on the range, depending on the day. But you go out there at the beginning of the day, and you shoot all day, and a lot of times you're picking up brass with a flashlight, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You're shooting, and we got so good. I mean, with the amount of shooting that we did, the amount of training, and then when you're not shooting, you know, gosh, Uncle Sam's ammo is a beautiful thing. but yeah, when you're not shooting, you're dry firing, and everything is constantly getting back to the basics where you're getting into, you know, by the numbers, drawn from holster, you know, all standing online doing draws, and then we would do a lot with simulation rounds too. You know, force on force with sim rounds, and
So you had the coolest job ever.
That was fun.
That's what I heard.
It was fun.
You got paid to do this.
But so in that we had all that ammunition, if there was a lot of trips going on, we have a lot of guys out and not a lot of people able to go to the range because, you know, mission takes priority and everybody's out and then everybody else has to be on duty.
Yep.
So we'd sometimes be like, hey, we're getting a new ammo shipment and we haven't really shot a whole lot. So
we test to make sure it works.
Yep. So all the, you know, the corporals of the guard and sergeants of the guard and everybody who was off duty who kind of had some clout, we'd all go and bring some of the new guys, make them load magazines, and we'd just shoot for a day and just dump rounds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'd double chicken wing two M1014s and just pull the triggers as fast as you can, to, you know, because you're just getting rid of ammo. Yeah. You know, you have to.
I'm imagining like...
Because there's more coming.
Imagine like 80s, 90s, like action movie, like yelling, like get to the chopper.
Yeah, you know, we were professionals, and we acted in a manner of becoming of the United States Marine Corps and
Sure.
So in a manner becoming, what are the fundamentals of dual wielding MP5?
Okay, well, you cannot do it like Mr. and Mrs. Smith style. But yeah, if you bear down, you can collapse the stocks, and if you get a good chicken wing in both your arms and you push hard, you can shoot them both out the front and dump a full 30 rounds.
That's amazing. Getting
too far.
No,
it is all over the place, but you can keep it going forward.
Press the fire, right? That's right. I mean, you guys practice for a zombie invasion. Right?
I mean, I know, all things, right?
Yeah, I think the White House has got a page on. Like,
I'm sure it does. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. The Pentagon's got a zombie
and
file.
Clearly, the best way to deal with zombies is
dual wielding and collapsed MP5. That's absolutely
fantastic.
Yep. Oh, you're saying you can't confirm or deny the zombie information?
Oh, it's. I think it's on the White House.
Is it for real?
Like, website.
I am just a old crayon eater who forgot everything. I don't know anything.
Okay, so where does that originate from? The whole crayon eating.
You know, it's somebody made a joke about it at some point. Army loser who just wanted to be us but couldn't. Or I don't know. I'm just kidding. I love the army too. but you know, it just kind of became the joke that we're a bunch of knuckle dragging crayon eaters, and then we just embraced it because we are.
So what's your favorite color?
Oh, absolutely green. Come on, man.
Does it taste like apple?
Yeah, if you can get the big pack and you find the OD green one. I mean, that thing's fire, yo. That thing is fire.
Tastes like jalapeno.
Oh, it tastes like
freedom.
Freedom and cordite.
No. Oh, that's great. Wow.
You heard it here first, guys.
The green. The OD green.
OD green.
Oh,
maybe
man.
Some coyote brown, you know, as a close second, but
that's awesome.
Oh, you gotta get the really big pack to find that.
So I guess kind of back on track. So we didn't really talk about this, but which administration did you even work under?
So I started under the Bush administration, and then I was there for the transition, and then ended under the Obama administration.
So you're there for the transition. Yeah.
It was very interesting, to say the least.
What can you tell us?
So you're saying you transitioned underneath the Obama administration. Got it.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. So I got there under Bush, did my first trip under the Bush administration. And you know, the White House staff under the Bush administration was very respectful.
Oh yeah.
They were very, you know, hey, do you need anything? Can I get you a bottle of water? You know, everything.
Yep.
And just very, very kind, very cordial.
Yep.
Kind of got it.
Yep.
And for lack of better, that the Obama administration came in there, a lot of very young people with a big chip on their shoulder, and the environment changed drastically on trip. I won't besmirch anybody too much, but it was
for sure.
A very different mindset towards the help, I would say. It's how I kind of had the feeling. It was
too bad.
So there's something. I mean, you hear the stories of whatever your opinion was on Bush. One thing that he did well was take care of the military.
Right? Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know. He did get us into two pointless wars, and we can go into all that. But yes,
getting into the war, like when he was
there was a lot of respect for all of the White House military office personnel for sure. You know, very very cordial.
Yeah,
very you know guys that so when you're part of the White House military office, once you do your time, and if you are you know. Solid, upstanding, and you get through your time and you know, it's time for you to transition out. One of the things, the perks that you get is you actually get to go on a tour of the White House, and you get to go to the Oval Office and get your picture taken with the president.
That's so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. Yeah. So I miss Bush, unfortunately, but yeah. I've got my little tiny baby face cheesing next to Barack Obama in the Oval Office in my dress blues. So it's
that's kind of a cool
picture to have. You know, yeah, it's cool. I mean, to see the whole, you know, White House and everything, but. Yeah, so you get to kind of do that, and you know, all the guys that had any contact with, you know, he would every once in a while come down to and just chat with, you know, guys that were, you know, Bush came by, and you know, we never saw that with the other administration. I didn't, at least. You know, but I mean, you know, they all got their ups and downs, you know.
I know.
Insert your politics where they are. It's just they were young and had a chip on their shoulder, and they thought they were better than everybody, honestly, is my opinion on it.
That makes sense.
The staffers, at least, you know, that I encountered. It was just that was the only difference I really noticed. I mean, everything else is just, you know, you just do your job.
For sure.
Right.
Just certain people would try, you know, the Bush people, it was just, they'd have their ID out when they got to you. They'd, you know, tell you the name, kind of stand back, do the thing.
Yep.
And the as soon as that switch over happened, people just try to walk past you, and it's like, whoa, like, hang on, who are you? I'm so and so.
I was gonna say, did you get any of that? Don't you know who I am?
I
don't have your ID. Thank you.
Yeah, I will take that, and we'll move along. You know, and I'm sorry, your boss's boss can be in here, but you certainly cannot, and you're not getting past here. You know, and you'd have to have that stern conversation with them, and way more often.
And then every once in a while you had to tackle them, right?
Yeah,
and
tactfully.
But
yeah, I mean, it's when you're just a, you know, corporal in Marine Corps, you don't really get to see the fixings of how everything works.
For sure.
You could just see the attitude difference a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. But
no, my Marine buddy, so he tells a story about how he was somewhere, and the general that there was just being extremely disrespectful to his team, and President Bush was actually there.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward some time, he put a letter on the general's desk like, I expect your resignation, because of just how terribly he was treating his team.
You gotta be careful, man.
Yeah, because Bush was like, that ain't happening.
I think he understood the gravity of what he did to all those boys a little bit, I think. I mean,
actually,
for better or worse, I think he got
what
happened.
That's what it was. It was a guy, since Bush was there, he was in the Middle East somewhere, and everyone's like, hey, Bush is here, let's all be respectful, take pictures with him. And one guy's like, I'm not going to take a picture with him. I don't want to do that. And the general, the guy in charge, was like, you have to force him. Try to figure out. Bush was like, what's going on? I was like, well, he won't take a picture with you. He's like, he doesn't have to. He doesn't want to. He was just being an absolute jerk about it.
We are Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but
it's
that
like,
looks,
he respects
I'm
you.
In order, from the general's perspective, it's like, yeah, that's the commander in chief.
Exactly.
You will absolutely respect that man.
And
you
of
know?
Course, it backfires. Yeah. Was like, yeah, you're out.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that. Man, that would suck. Looking back, but
damned
either
if you
way,
do, damned if you don't.
I know. So like, that guy really was a lose-lose right there. That sucks. Oh well, moving on.
Yeah. So do you like keep in contact with anybody out there? Because my guess is that they probably switch over a lot. And
So you make, you know, buddies for life. We all just kind of spread to the four winds. So it's, you know, you chat every once in a while. My buddy Jay, you know, we catch back up every once in a while. Him and I we went through boot camp together, you know, through all our training together. We were, you know, roommates at, you know, when I was, you know, barracks mates, whatever, when I was, you know, at WACA. And then he ended up, we both actually punched orders down to MARSOC, and both, you know, denied it. And he went over, I think I want to say 1-6 maybe. Don't quote me on that, but they ended up doing the push into Marja. And that was one heck of a thing.
Yeah.
So basically he loaded in the middle of the city, and it was fight your way out, you know, just clear it as you go, fight your way out. So he extended, did that, and then he got out. And so, you know, him and I have kind of stayed in contact, and he's, you know, dealt with some things with that and with, you know, for his sake, you know, his brother dealt some things with him. He was a Marine too. But you know, just a lot of that stuff too. A lot of guys, you know, just struggling when they get out and stuff, and just reaching out, making sure, make sure guys are all right. You know, but you all kind of go to the four winds, and then you have kids and you get married and you know, You just live life, and every once in a while you touch base. But, you know, I mean, it's like all those guys are brothers for life. You know what I mean? Like, they show back up, and it's like, all right, let's go, you know.
But, yeah. What a fantastic experience that you went through. I'm curious if there's any other insights that you have about your role being in. Like, for anybody that may be listening that's considering it, like anything that your thoughts that we haven't covered with you today that we wouldn't even know to ask.
I mean, if you're going to go in, know that I would say if you're considering going into the Marine Corps, your first 2 to 4 years are going to be pretty miserable.
Yeah.
It's going to be miserable. So get used to it. Embrace the suck.
Yep.
You know, you're a Marine. You can carry that with you for the rest of your life, but you are going to be miserable a lot.
Yeah.
And you better enjoy a very aggressive environment where people like to fight and be horrible to each other and even the people who love you. You know, it is an absolute wolf pack.
Yeah.
In the best of ways, you know.
Yeah.
But be aware that you are going to be miserable as a PFC, as a Lance Corporal, until you gain a little bit of clout. And even then, you know, it is a rough, rough, rough place.
Yeah.
And it is not for the weak of heart, you know. Mm. If you're wanting to make a career out of something and you're not like, I am going to be a Marine and I am going to do it and I'm going to be a lifer and this is like my dream, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if that's where you're at, and Marine Corps is a great place. There's guys who thrive in it. Other people, you know, if you're just going to look at it as a career, we're past war now. I would, you know, if you're not seeking battle, go Air Force.
I feel like it's what everyone
I know.
Says.
I always,
yeah. Just go to Air Force.
Yeah. I lived on an Air Force base, you know, yes. We're on the Naval Annex of it, but their quality of life is incredible.
Oh yeah. My stepdad.
Skill sets that you get are incredible, you know, and if you're not in it just to be one of the dudes just gutting through it, getting wet, getting dirty, you know, getting soaked in the field. If you love that kind of stuff and you thrive in that, it's a great place to be.
Yeah.
You know, but just make sure you look at all your options and know what you're getting into. Because you walking in there blind, you can have a really, really, really miserable time.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guys who...
For 4 years.
You're stuck.
Yep.
I know guys that got in that just weren't built for it.
For sure.
And it crushed their soul. I mean, and it's, you know, it's piranhas smelling blood. You know, if you're the weak kid, I mean, we had one kid, we call them Butters from South Park.
Yeah.
And he was just, you know, he's a great kid, but he was just soft spoken and he was kind of meek. And he was absolutely preyed upon.
Yeah.
You know, so just that would be my only advice. But if you think you're tough, good luck, try it.
Otherwise, Air Force.
Or Air Force.
Funny enough, because my stepdad is a retired Air Force. Mm-hmm. He did 21 years, he was a pilot. And now he's working at FedEx, loving life.
As a pilot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, now he's in the big leagues.
The
FedEx
officer
is,
pilot life is where it's at.
But exactly.
Go fly planes.
Pretty much.
He
got to a point where he's, towards the end of his career, he flew the four-star admiral around.
Yeah.
That was his job. So it was nice and cushy.
I had the Air Force pilot you were talking about earlier, he was saying that if you ever look at an Air Force base, they have golf courses.
Oh, yeah.
And none of the other branches, maybe they do.
Well,
maybe someplace
you know why?
Because they spend all their money on retainment.
No,
not recruitment.
Because a golf course is nothing but a willful and intentional misuse of a perfectly good rifle range. They will not stand for that.
That is awesome.
It's another type of
range.
Fish.
Yeah. That's where you always say that.
That is the most Marine thing I've ever
seen. That is so true.
That long range shooting is the real man's golf.
Exactly.
So, oh, yeah. That's glorious.
You can put a golf ball out there, but you better be hitting it with a 5.56. I tell you what.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, man. So would you recommend people to go into the military today?
Today? No.
That's what
not
I
even
about
a little bit.
That's,
like
that's
about
definitely
a year
what...
After the election.
Still.
Why,
so
why, I guess,
much,
why do you say that?
I say that because so much blood was spilt for an absolutely unnecessary conflict that was lied about for 20 years to generate money for a oligarchy structure of the military-industrial complex and the Uniparty. Not to get too political, but it's about enriching those up top, and until those people want to sit there and toe the line and send their own children into war... I have no reason to go into somebody else's country that we have no business being in.
Yep.
Via whether it be Ukraine or anybody else. Mm. People can fight their own battles. Somebody comes here, game on. Yep. Somebody threatens us directly. But
that's a novel thought. Protect your own border.
Exactly. I know, right? but at this point, with the way the military is, with how non-combat oriented it's become, it's all about, you know, this agenda experiment and the social things and mm-hmm. punching the buttons and going to you know, sensitivity trainings and taking away from actual time to turn yourself into a lethal machine,
for sure.
Which the entire reason that you know, especially the United States Marine Corps, the entire reason it exists is to get pointed in a direction and to eliminate whatever is there that needs to not be there to meet America's strategic goals.
Yep.
And that is no longer something that's being effectively created in most places. The Marine Corps is still doing a pretty good job, I think, of maintaining that concept.
Yep.
But as a whole, the military right now is broken.
Yep.
And the people in charge are not the leaders that I would want to go to war underneath.
So how do we fix it then? Because we need a strong
like
military.
New leaders.
I know, right?
We need good, strong military leaders who are willing to take the punches from the administrations and from the people who are telling them to do all these things and just flat out tell them no. Like, we are here to be a lethal force to defend this country, and that is our only purpose. Mm-hmm. Go pound sand. And the other thing we could do is, you know, completely eliminate the federal government other than the most minute
I'm good with that.
Potentials.
To
and,
the original concept.
Yeah, maybe go back to where we should have been from the beginning. That's my biggest plan. But other than that, I don't know if there is a fix.
At a base level, stop sending your children to indoctrination camps, otherwise known as
schools.
Public
schools.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem that is... has a very simple solution that has an extremely complicated pathway.
Yeah.
That I don't think we're ever going to get to.
Yeah. So let's say we don't get that fixed. What do you foresee will happen to America then?
I don't think that my kids will be living in the same prosperity that we are.
Yeah.
I agree.
To be perfectly honest.
Okay.
It scares me.
Unfortunately, I agree.
But unless something drastic happens where this ruling class decides to stop directly extracting all of the wealth from the middle class of this country and redistributing it mainly to the top and pretending to bring it to the bottom, this country's unsustainable. I mean, you know, most people my age, I'm blessed with the, you know, the job that I have and the job that my wife has, where we can afford, you know, a nice house and,
for
and
sure.
things.
Groceries.
But most people, I mean, most people my age even are still renting.
Yeah.
They're not building wealth. They're not.
No.
We're the first generation where there has not been this trend in upward mobility. It's the millennial generation has turned into this massively neurotic, just hopeless group of people, because we watched our parents tell us to do all these things, to
so
go to college,
true.
To
it's
do
so
all these things,
true.
And you're going to get all these things. You can buy that starter house, except they bought the starter house and were renting it, and so that it wasn't available.
Yep.
And then they bought the next starter house and the next starter house, and they jacked all the prices on them. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm not directly blaming the boomers for every problem in this country, but I think the buck stops with the generation that is refusing to abdicate power to the next generation.
So true. That's such a great point.
It's going to be really interesting when we get to the point where that generation starts to age out to the point where they expire. Right?
Yeah. And that's what it's going to take, to be honest, because they are holding on to power and money and with, I mean, Nancy Pelosi, I can't even begin to believe that she's actually still functional, but I think it's just the pickled nature of that woman and the pure evil in her heart that has continued to allow her to be animated. But they just cling to it till their dying breath instead of abdicating power to the next generation who actually needs to make decisions for them and their kids.
Yes.
They're saying, I'm going to make decisions for people that, I mean, I'm going to pop off tomorrow, but I'm going to make my mint right now and I'm going to do what's best for me and my buddies. It's blessed is the society whose old men plant trees in which they will never sit in the shade of.
Yeah.
So
and
good.
Huh. They're chopping down every tree in the forest.
That's so yep. true.
So
and it's going to leave this weird, and I don't want to get too deep down this route either, but it's going to leave a weird, it's going to leave a weird vacuum when they're gone.
Yeah.
Of like these people that are inexperienced in leading, also now we're having being forced to lead in those spaces.
Which means our generation needs to step up big
right.
time.
And, exactly. And it's weird because there's a lot of that, like, you know, and there's a lot of, I work in technology, so there's a lot of companies were started by, not really tangential, so I'm going to stop it here, but there's a lot of young people that have started companies that like just don't know how to lead them properly and then trying to figure out how to deal with this, like this fortune that they've created.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we could talk about this forever,
but I do round two.
I know,
yeah, right? That'll be round two.
Thank you, John and Brian, for coming today. Yep. I guess let's end with just one piece of advice. What is one piece of advice you would give?
Yeah, like John? Your dad advice.
What's your
one
dad advice?
Piece of advice? Let's see. Oh man, put me on the spot with a piece
and
of advice.
Brian, if you have one off the top of your head,
yeah,
you
if you
can
got
just go
one, I'm trying to think
well
of a good piece of advice.
Yep.
Off the top of my head. I don't
know. Okay, I'll start off then while you guys are talking. And Tyler and I just had a conversation about this, so it is topical to something that's come up, and actually topical to this conversation. Live within your means.
Yes.
So true.
And when you do get that point where you move up, try to continue to live within your means
mm-hmm.
and do everything you can to pay off your debt so that you can create those trees that you will plant,
mm-hmm.
like you're talking about, that you will never see the fruit of. So
yeah,
that is my dad advice for the day.
Yep.
See, my dad advice for the day is don't put a fork in an electric socket.
there we go.
And I would say be very careful who you marry.
Yes.
Round one. Yeah. And speaking as a, you know, part of the club, we all have to go at least two rounds, you know, and I think it's required it's actually a government issue that you get a divorce. but be very, 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 very sure of who you are and who your spouse is and who you are becoming and who you are going to be in your life before you make a commitment like that.
So true.
That is, I think, the most important thing you can do. It will set you up for an immensely better life for yourself and your children, finding that person that is truly your life partner.
Yeah.
And I fortunately have found mine.
That's awesome.
Absolute love of my life. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful woman that I love with all my heart. But it took a while to find her, and it's okay to wait. It's okay to not get married with right away. You know, be single for a while. Figure yourself out before you commit to something that could go very awry.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's my dad advice.
So, and not getting too far down that route too, but we know you were talking about earlier with coming out of military service and then still being used to being in that wolf pack. And now, you know, you said you found that that person that really gets you and that is like, you know, your, I don't know if you call it soulmate or not, but like, would you say that she helped soften your edges?
I think I would say she accentuated, so my wife and I have been married for almost a year now.
Okay.
Right. So I would say she very much accentuates the good, things about me.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And accepts me, without
great.
You know, but will gently nudge, when she needs to, you know,
for
she's
sure.
a very good sounding board with things like that. And when you can find that person that can gently speak to you in your weak areas without it creating a conflict,
yep.
It's so much easier to, like, you know what? I am wrong. You brought up a thing that, and getting to that point too, where you can check yourself and say, you know what? I'm wrong. I am wrong.
Yeah.
My bad. You know, and moving awesome. On from that. But yeah, if you can find that person where you get that dynamic that you're allowing each other to be wrong in any situation, and being wrong doesn't mean you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Being wrong doesn't mean you're going to be mad. Being wrong doesn't mean that I don't love you. You know, when you finally get that click where it's like, you did something that I don't like, but I still love you with my whole heart, and I am not, you know, your boss. You are not in trouble we are going to work this, us against a problem. What is our solution? When you get to that point, you're, you know, it's life is amazing.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Thought of some dad advice.
Good.
I'm actually going to go off of something John said at one point because it put into words something that I think a lot, and it's kindness. I was having a conversation with a coworker, and I was talking about having times where I'd lose my temper. Yep. And she's like, I just couldn't imagine you that way.
Me either.
And it's like, just because I'm kind doesn't mean...
Don't mistake my kindness for weakness.
That's exactly what he said. And I was like, before that, I didn't have that phrase. We do the gun stuff. And I think I mentioned this a little bit the last time I was on. Don't be the hard butt. Don't be the guy like, you know, I'm tough and this. And
yep.
Be kind. Be nice. Mm. People like that. And
be kind. Be courteous. Have a plan to kill everybody you meet.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's very true.
What he's saying is he already had a plan for the three of us. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, we're still alive. So that's
actually cool. Are Tyler and I the only ones carrying right now, I think?
Not allowed to because you guys brought me into a church building.
I'm your cover, though, because without you, I don't get a check. And
I was about to say, I'm his EDC.
I got these.
Yeah, this man literally says that. I'm his EDC.
But yeah, be kind.
Yeah.
It's not
rewind.
Hard. Yeah, choose not to be a piece of crap every day.
For sure.
All the people that were 35 and older got your be kind.
Hey, rewind. It's good.
Yep. So everybody else below that age has no idea what.
I know what be kind rewind is.
27, bro.
Yeah.
A young buck.
All right, 27-year-old, what's your young buck advice?
So, definitely piggybacking off of that. So the difference between a nice guy and a good man is boundaries. So nice guys tend to be people pleasers. And remember this, people pleasing is self-abandonment. And believe it or not, people pleasing is manipulation. So don't be a people pleaser. Be a good man.
Word.
Fantastic. Like that. That's great advice to end on. Again.
Also carry a gun everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you're invited to a church.
Yep.
I obey laws, Mr. FBI man, who knows listening to me.
Yes. Even though the 2A trumps everything anyway.
Yep. John, Brian, thank you guys very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having
this
me.
Was a fantastic podcast.
Agreed.
And again, thank you both very much. And I'm sure we'll hear from you both again down the road as we continue this crazy podcast.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Good. So cool. Well, thank you, listeners.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.